Tim Versalotti is director of the Western New England University poll, professor of political science. I guess my first thing I want to ask you is, James Comey comes on ABC and is now going everywhere else, basically blast the president, saying he's unfit for the office. Any thoughts?
It is taking public discourse to areas we've never seen it head to before. It's pretty remarkable, even in this age of Trump, to watch the rhetoric both from James Comey and then in response from Donald Trump. And one has to wonder, Comey is trying to fix his place in history right now, and it's a history that's trying to keep up with events. He's almost off the surface of relevance here. It seems like an eternity since the events that he's describing occurred, when they were really only about 15 months ago. So he's having his time in the spotlight now. There's still a great deal of debate over his motivations in terms of how he handled the email investigation and the resumption of the investigation in late October of 2016, and did that materially affect the outcome of the race? There are lots of Democrats who feel that it did. Comey's trying to give his side of the story now, but it seems to me that there are chapters, more significant chapters, yet to be written in terms of the material that Comey is working with as we wait for the Mueller investigation to reach its conclusion. Heaven knows when that'll be.
So, Tim Versalotti, it's easy to talk about what people think and the rest of it, but did James Comey cost Hillary Clinton the election?
That's one of those unknowables. If we were to simply look at data, if we were simply to look at polling around that time, you would see a drop in support for Hillary Clinton. And so whether that was related or not, one could make an argument that it was. But there were we have to remember the dynamics of the outcome of the 2016 election. But for about 77,000 votes in three states, we would be discussing Madam President Clinton as opposed to President Trump. So to say any one factor tip the balance, I think, is oversimplifying a really complex set of dynamics there.
Okay, let's switch from Comey and the president to the Mueller investigation. Now, we're told that the raid on Trump's lawyer has in fact been of more difficult for the president to absorb than the Mueller investigation all of a sudden. What happens if he fires Mueller?
So a lot of the cascading effects of firing Mueller would be, number one, I think Republicans in the House and Senate would be put on the spot. Republicans who have said that this would be a disastrous decision, Lindsey Graham, Charles Grassley of Iowa among them, who are saying that the president simply cannot fire the deputy attorney general and then put someone in his place to fire Mueller. But stranger things have happened. This would be a test. It would be a time when Republicans would have to decide whether they choose party or they choose the rule of law here, and it's hard to predict where it will go. What is interesting about the raid that confiscated the materials from Michael Cohen's home office and hotel room,
right,
is that was all approved out of the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Southern District of New York. So even if Mueller were to be fired, the U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York recused himself from this matter involving Cohen, and one would assume that that would proceed. So what the president has been worried about has suddenly taken on a whole new dimension, further removed from the chain of command in the executive branch, and it would be far more difficult to shut down that part of the investigation. Things became a lot more complicated with the revelation that Michael Cohen had been under investigation for several months, and then these raids.
All of this is not good news for the president, but his polling is interesting, isn't it?
It is. It's inched up a little bit in the last few months. Depending on the poll that you look at, it's upper 30s, low 40s for approval for the president. It hasn't declined. He did seem to get some bump when people first started seeing some extra money in their paychecks as a result of the tax cut. That seems to have subsided, and we seem to be in a sort of stationary position here, almost in equilibrium on opinion about the president. It's not fluctuating a whole lot right now. I think the country collectively may be holding its breath to see where the special prosecutor's investigation goes before rendering any further judgment on the president.
Now, I don't know how to put this on the radio, but the Trump relationship with women is not all that good right now. Some people have called him, you know, the fornicator in chief. And so what I'm thinking about here is all the Me Too movement, all the women who vote in this country, is there any way we can tell based on polling what women in this country are thinking about this guy?
If you break down some of the available data on the president's job approval, white women have begun to feel less positive about the president. Women of color had never supported him and had voted in very large numbers for Hillary Clinton in 2016. So that's something to keep an eye on, coupled with the historic number of women who are running for the House of Representatives, for state legislative seats, for seats further down on the ballot in the 2018 election. That suggests that there is a lot of enthusiasm, a lot of determination on the part of women voters. And again, it'll all come down to turnout in terms of whether that translates into more political power in the November elections.
But what is it that allows, you know, a middle-class woman to vote for a guy who is so incredibly awful about the way in which he treats women?
It's for women who support President Trump. When you think about focus groups, and sometimes you see some focus group data coming out about this, women who remain in support of President Trump are choosing party, or are saying, well, I don't believe these allegations, or are saying, well, that's locker room talk among men. That doesn't really speak to his character. There are a number of elaborate rationalizations that individuals can bring forth. And the same question goes to evangelical Christians who continue to support President Trump and argue, we are not electing a saint. We're not electing a perfect individual. We're choosing someone who has his flaws, but don't we all? And again, there are folks who say, well, that's just a rationalization. That's tribalism at work here. There's some argue even more extreme. That's just basic white nationalism.
I was about to say that to you. And I'm going to add a minute on to our conversation here that I hadn't anticipated, because it seems to me so much of this, when you say tribalism or white, use the word white or Caucasian, some of this has to do with racism, plain and simple.
There has been some political science research since the 2016 cycle in which because the initial takeaway from news media was, well, it's the white working class that elected President Trump and are his most ardent supporters. But political scientists have dug down into the data, and they have found that it's not so much class, but it is nationalism and to some extent race that's motivating some of the most ardent support for President Trump. These are claims that are still being debated, and folks are still looking at the research, and they're extremely controversial. But the empirical evidence right now is there. And so it's important, and it's important for this to filter out to journalists who are covering presidential politics, that it's not just about class. It's not just about going to diners and talking to blue-collar workers about President Trump, that there's more going on here. And these are very difficult themes to tease out just in interviews mm-hmm. with individuals. It takes a lot of very careful measurement, if you're even gathering survey data, to measure a concept that we call symbolic racism, where people articulate attitudes where they certainly don't think they're being racist, but if you were to dig deep into the motivations, race is a factor there. These are not easy things to measure, no, for sure, but they're out there, and we're seeing some interesting research in political science suggesting that race and nationalism are important factors to think about when we're analyzing the 2016 election.
And thank you so much, Tim Versalotti, director of the Western New England University Poll, professor of political science, a guy I like to call my friend and a man I admire very much. Tim, can't wait till the next cycle when you come back and visit us again.
I look forward to it. Thank you, Alan.